I'm notorious for like jumping into something and then being like halfway through, oh, I didn't actually record.
Oh,
I'm just new to interviewing. Yeah, it's like a formal conversation, which is quite an interesting format to like engage with someone, I think. Very new to me.
There you'd probably be better at it, I feel like. I don't know if that means anything.
I hope so. I'll take that.
Like, do you have to
I'll take that.
be you talk to people?
Yeah. You're finished touring at the moment, or are you kind of like paused for a bit?
Yeah, I did a tour, an American tour, North American tour in o October and November with my brother's band, the Preox. And then I just did a impromptu tour with them playing bass. That was at the end of January. That was a month-long tour. My brother injured his hand, and so then I jumped in and played bass for them for a month on a tour in Europe. And then I came back, and then I did, I think it was six or seven shows, Cindy Lee shows. I played in Richmond, Virginia, played in Charlottesville, Virginia, Baltimore, Maryland, and then I did two concerts in New York, a concert in Montreal, and a concert in Toronto. Yeah, so that was the Cindy Lee tour. Yeah. And then I'm gonna do a it hasn't been announced yet, but a tour of North America this summer.
Oh my gosh, I wish I could teleport.
Yeah, I wish I could teleport over there too. Yeah. Although the plane's like pretty close, but it ain't free.
No, it's closer. Sometimes I think about that and I'm like, we basically have teleportation. It's kind of frightening.
Yeah, when you look out the window on the plane, or when I do anyways, I actually think about what's happening. I'm like, oh yeah, this is I'm like complaining about how much it costs and all this stuff, and then I'm like in the clouds in a fucking bird machine. Anyways, that's a bit 420 talk for you, but yeah, it's insane. The bird machine works, for Christ's sake. Oh, by the way, can I should I clean up my language? Is this a
Nope.
okay,
Nope.
I'll try to not, but
No, you can go ahead. We have an ad on our radio show that literally says, what is it? It's like buck knuckles, cock piss and balls. And then it says, if you have any complaints, send them to the Broadcasting Standards Association. So
okay.
there's like, say whatever you want. It's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Within reason,
Well,
obviously. Yeah.
I won't do my usually incendiary, I think I know what that means, incendiary language.
Yeah. And I was gonna ask about one of my friends at the station, Spike. I told them this morning that I was interviewing you, and they were super excited. And they wanted me to ask you about the show you have coming up in Chicago. The Les Ralliers de Noodle one. Got terrible pronunciation of French.
Oh yeah, that's like a kind of, yeah, no one knows how to say it, and I actually don't even think those are real French words. That's kind of the nature of their band. It's like you figure it out, you make the albums. Yeah, it's like a, it sounds like it's a kind of tribute, kind of like Las Vegas Casino, our generation's, maybe not Jimmy Buffett might be a stretch, but it's for the people who love Rallies a Denude, or however you say it. It's like a tribute show or something. And yeah, for, they emailed me about it, and then I was like, okay, because I love their band, and I'm not a they strike me as kind of a completist kind of record nerd band. I know one of their albums, which is Heavier Than a Death in the Family. It's a bootleg of one of their concerts, but it's one of my favorite albums ever. And I've listened to it countless times, and it's just, I think it's a masterpiece. So that's really dear to me. And I've heard some of their other stuff here and there, but that's kind of the main thing. That's their Back in Black or whatever for me. So yeah, I was into it. I mean, and they're also one of the coolest bands ever. So not only is that the music amazing on that record, but all the photos of Mizutani and the band, they have killer fucking style. And so, and very androgynous too, Mizutani, so yeah, I've always been a huge fan of them and him. And so when they asked me to do it, I was really excited about it. So I said yes, which I say no to pretty much everything. But I guess it's going to be in a cemetery. That sounds cool. So yeah, I don't know how the buried feel about some rock and roll concert being blasted over their tombstones, but
Yeah, well, they might enjoy it, something a bit different.
I guess the city's okay with it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I would. Yeah, I mean, it's my funeral, right?
But yeah, that's really interesting. Like you talk about completionist bands. I always find that an interesting thing as like DJ and also someone who loves music is that like I feel like I never ever like delve fully into people's discographies, but there'll be certain artists that you do. And it's like such a, I don't know if you get like imposter syndrome with that sometimes, but it's just like an interesting concept to me. And you're like, oh, can I even say that I love this artist if I haven't listened to every single release, every demo?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't even want to think that way. But I've realized that that is something people kind of pride themselves on, which is more about like a social kind of weird, insecure, compensating, weird clout thing than like about actually loving anything. So I've been more into like, there's things I love and I some people it's just like seven songs and I've listened to those seven songs hundreds of times. So I think I still love it. I might need to get an expert to approve of it for me, but...
No, no, it's just like relieving to hear that because I'm like, oh yeah, cool. I'm not the only one that's just like, you just like smash New Zealand slang, but you like really delve into like certain releases and that for you is like what you connect to. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I think that's the point, right? Is just loving things and enjoying them instead of, you know, running down some like a spreadsheet. Yeah. And that's cool too. Like I've done that with some people for sure, you know, but it's the point is not to bring it up later. It's just because I'm like, oh, what else is there to listen to, you know?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like an advent calendar or something.
All comes back to JC.
Yeah, well, speaking of like, JC has been Easter recently as well.
Yeah. Is it a Christian nation? It's a Christian nation, right? Your nation?
Absolutely. Yep. Well, yeah, we're a colonized nation as well. So we kind of have a lot of like, especially in the European, like Pakeha kind of sphere, like repressed Victorian values.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Canada's the same shit. Same project. Yep.
It's fascinating as someone who like hasn't really grown up with a religious background, but you get like really drawn into references to like spirituality and Christianity and art. And like, for me, I'll go through like Catholic phases or whatever. The iconography is really cool. I'm wondering about you with like Cindy Lee, because I feel like that's definitely present in your music a bit, and like the sort of like devotional aspect of spirituality, or like sex, self-sacrificial. I don't know, maybe that's too far. Have I gone too far?
No, I mean, that's just what I'm made of, so that's just personal to me. Just religious torment, you know, spiritual warfare and these kinds of things. And I still respect people's faith, or like on a personal level, but I'd really separate that from the obvious way that's been maneuvered to you know, with conquest and genocide and all that. Not crazy about that, really going out on a limb there, but the but yeah, on a personal level, yeah, I've always been fascinated by that. And that's just what I grew up in. So that's definitely a theme. I mean, it's hilarious, too, because all of this rebellious music, like you just think about most metal music, you know, from the 80s or whenever that shit started up, is kind of like a teenage rebellion. Like, what am I getting at? It wouldn't exist without Christianity, but it's all anti-Christian. And the anti-Christian element is what sold all the records and kind of cultivated the following and stuff, you know. Everybody's just like, you know, fuck you, mom and dad or whatever. But yeah, I don't stray very far from that. It's just kind of yeah, there's a lot, I use a lot of the imagery in my songs, and it gets into that foggy territory too, you know, if you're for it or against it, or if you believe it whether you like it or not or anything like that. But that's more of a personal kind of, you know, it's all pretty vague, honestly. I don't really think about it too much until I'm doing an interview and then have to explain it.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's just like that's what comes up when you're songwriting as well. Like, it's always kind of hard to look back on necessarily what was happening in the moment, I think, and like dissect it.
Yeah, definitely. So there's definitely a lot of religious themes in my music. Both sides of my family are very religious. So whether that's Catholicism or non-denominational Christian or Mormon. So that's all like built in there.
I want to talk about realistic radio as well. That's really cool. Like, you've got kind of this storytelling, like narrative arc that will run through it. And then it feels kind of like a collage or like assemblage at the same time. Have you always been really interested in like radio and pulling together samples from that? And like how, yeah, what's your process for that?
Oh yeah, for sure. That's cool you listen to that. I actually stopped doing it because it was kind of replacing the creative part of what I do. What I mean is I would sequence these radio shows and then feel totally satisfied with the music in there and the audio, like these interview clippings and what you're talking about, because it, to me, it'd be a perfect record every time I made one of those episodes where I was like, oh, this is all my favorite shit. And so I didn't feel like I really needed to do anything myself anymore. I was like, ah, it's covered. So yeah, I stopped doing it, but I did it for a few years and really enjoyed it. And I don't know, I guess, yeah, I would, whatever. I would use YouTube and just slam in different tracks I was into or things friends would send me or friends knew music. And then different things I was fixating on, just take clippings out of it and then just smash it together, you know? And then I'd see a vague thread. Like, I don't know if that comes across, but some of them, yeah, there's a lot of religious and spiritual stuff in there. And then a lot of like really basic showbiz stuff in there too. I guess it's just like kind of North American, just entertainment stuff, you know? So some subversive stuff and then a lot of like really straight pop culture stuff, you know? Like there's one episode with Fred Willard, who is like an old school, really old comedian. He didn't really have any success, I want to say, until the 90s when he was in a bunch of Christopher Guest movies, but he was like this real aspiring, kind of like LA guy, you know, just trying so hard to break into showbiz. And there's something really funny, like he's funny in the first place, but he's also funny because he's like this relic of like trying to be funny. So to me, it's funny for so many different reasons, you know, like, and just the fact of how hard he's trying to be funny is funny to me. And I really love that guy and pretty dated, dusty style and content and stuff, but I just get a kick out of him. And oh, anyways, I was digging into him and watching all these things he did, and he cracks me up so much. And then I found out that he's got these bizarre satirical shows. I think it's called like The History of White America or something. It's kind of just roasting American Caucasian people or whatever, and like pretty sassy stuff that I thought was really funny. And then at one point he had this show called I can't even remember it. The point is, he would just feature public access shows and kind of follow, it's called like Discovering America or something like that, but he would go interview people who did public access shows, and then they would show snippets, almost like a reality TV thing where you don't have to write anything, you just kind of use other people as your content. And wait a minute, one sec, end, hold and accept. I just want to end. Someone's calling me, pardon me. Can you still hear me? Oh, for God's sake. Anyways, oh, I found a thing where he was interviewing this transgendered Pentecostal preacher from Portland, Oregon, called Sister Paula. And I went down the rabbit hole, like looking at her. And then I realized that there's this legendary club in Portland called Darcel's, where they were actually the booker, like a drag bar. Long story short, it was just a weird thread for me to go from Fred Willard to her. And my partner used to live in Portland and even took me to Darcel's when we were in Portland. And these kind of crossovers that kind of make no sense whatsoever. I guess all I'm getting at is those two things ended up in the same episode, Fred Willard and Sister Paula or whatever the hell her name was. That was like a year and a half ago when I did that. So I'm kind of scrambling to get the names back. But the point is, I was very fixated on both those people at the same time, and seeing how they crossed over in one TV show was kind of wild to me, you know.
Holy that's kind of like history. I don't know, for me that's like so cool to be able to do that through a radio show. That's like,
yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that was my perception of it, but it was more like just wild to me, because even within that, Sister Paula was within this religious framework where they would be criticized for their faith because of how they lived their life. And then, yeah, it just goes really deep. I mean, her hero was this this evangelist, this televangelist called Catherine Kuhlman. And Catherine Kuhlman was like basically like a con artist faith healer that would tour these huge venues and heal people. And maybe they were stand-ins or maybe they weren't and all this stuff. But they also have these old broadcasts that are on YouTube. I believe in miracles. And it looks amazing. Like the show and the production value of this Christian TV show looks amazing. And obviously the undercurrent and the politics of it are extremely flawed as far as I'm concerned. But the point is, on a personal basis, it's like, this is amazing. Like, her voice is very soothing. And you can watch, there's probably like six or seven of them on there where they've got this really ornate, beautiful set and she does her sermon. And what am I getting at? I'm just rambling. I guess it's just, I was fascinated with Catherine Kuhlman because she's, and even the way she talks and the way she speaks, and she's an entertainer. And it's kind of like a lullaby. Like, it almost feels like someone's telling you a bedtime story, but it's, you know, even it's a very terrifying story, you know? Yeah, for sure. But anyways, all I'm getting at is, in that one episode, I guess I just, there was these three different fixtures, Catherine Kuhlman, Fred Willard, Sister Paula, and then also thrown in, that was Marjo, who there was an Oscar winning movie about this televangelist. I guess it would be, they had records when they were a kid, but their name is a combination of Mary and Joseph, and their parents raised them up. This is like the fourth person. They made a movie about this kid. Basically, the kid was a little ATM machine for mommy and daddy doing the preaching circuit in the southern United States. And sold records and was an ordained minister by the time they were 10 years old and all this wild stuff. This kind of like child wonder preacher. And and then there's a great movie about Marjo called Marjo. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite movies. And it kind of sums up where my head's been at my whole life, where this person came up extremely devout. And then the character, it's a real person. Marjo actually becomes kind of a hippie. And then they go back to the preaching circuit just for financial reasons, because they already have this, they're legendary as far as the people are concerned. So they go back to the preaching circuit and make a shit ton of money. And then meanwhile, they don't really believe in what they're saying or what they're doing, but they love the music. And kind of like what you're saying before about like the iconography and the drama of it and all that. They kind of dabble with that. But yeah, that movie's amazing. So that's another thing that's in that one radio program, is Marjo, and Sister Paula's talking about how all great preachers are showmen or entertainers. And even Marjo talks about stealing Mick Jagger's moves, even when they're performing for like 70-year-old people, you know, in Florida or Tennessee or whatever, like stealing his moves. And then, you know, laying his hands on people and they pass out and faint and they're speaking in tongues. And then the collection plate goes around and then him and the other preachers counting the money at the end of the night and stuff. It's pretty wild. And then a bunch of rock and roll music. Yeah. So anyways, I'm just glad you listened to that. But yeah, that's just one episode that comes to mind. But I would just tie in a bunch of stuff like that. And I really like this artist, Ray Johnson, that did a lot of collages and stuff. And basically, everything they did was just an onslaught of associations and stupid puns and kind of wordplay in these associations that made a lot of sense to them and may or may not make any sense to whoever sees what they made. But so I just like that stuff. I like those kind of associations and stuff. And then I just love hits, so I just put them in the show.
Yeah, I like that. It's fun as a listener as well, because you're like, am I? Like, is something being said right now, or am I like reading into it? And then you get all kind of confused, and it's engaging, I think. I like it. Like a little puzzle with no answer. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not an answer. I don't even know if it's any good, you know? Like, I've thought about that, where I'm like, what does this actually mean? Or what does this actually say to people, you know? But it's just my little radio show, so I don't get too fired up about it. But there are a lot of like... whatever, I guess it's all conflicting stuff. So.
Well, I think for me, like as someone listening to it, it sounds like there was like fun and creativity and like care put into it, which I like. And I guess that's all, if that makes something good, then yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I also like I just I'm impressed by and jealous of people who have a lot of faith, because I feel like when you don't believe anything and you're very cynical and kind of you get into this nihilist, like everything's bullshit. And I feel like there's something nice, or I do, it's admirable to me when I see people who really believe in something. And it gives them a lot of strength, and it's like a magical kind of thinking where it's like a real sincere, earnest kind of dedication to something. And I just w I'd like to be more like that, and I don't know if I am, but yeah, I'm just impressed by that. So like there's even another one with I think her name's Jessie Mae Hemphill or something. Again, this is a show I did like 2 years ago. Oh, but where she's talking to this documentary filmmaker who's filming her in her trailer, and he's kind of, I don't know, he's like a Scandinavian dude or something. He's just like, it's kind of like I'm sure he respected her and all this stuff. I'm not gonna go to bat for her, like let me protect you with my words on a fucking New Zealand radio show. But there is an element of like, he's at the zoo and I need a subject, and here's this working class American. Or like some weird shit like that, which I don't even want to think like that, but that's how fucking people actually see it. So the point is, oh, at one point she's clocking the documentary filmmaker and being like, you think you did all this yourself? Like everything that's around you? You think you really think you're doing this all yourself? Like you don't believe in anything, and the guy's kind of squirming. And I just really loved that segment of the documentary where she's like, you fucking. You think I'm some like fool, but I
Yeah.
know way more than you.
And it's kind of seeing through that bullshit. Yeah. There's a Irish poet that I kind of love for that and kind of like talks with the sincerity, will kind of like turn it on its head and then everything winds up being this like pun or joke, which I think is like quite funny that Irish are good at, but John Donoghue. And like when you listen to him talk, he'll just like, yeah, he'll go on this like thing about beauty being like the answer and kind of like, and then he'll just make some random Irish pun, and it's kind of like, oh, okay.
Nice one.
I like that. Yeah. I've got to wrap up because I'm on a free Zoom and I only have 7 minutes.
Oh, Jesus. I just talked about that for like half an hour. Right.
So the last two questions I have are kind of silly, but the first is I really want to know if you like karaoke.
No, I mean, I won't go out. When I lived in Toronto, there'd be more karaoke because there's Koreatown, and then there'd be all of these Korean karaoke spots that you could go to. So that was awesome. I would do that when I lived there. And then when I was a teenager, we'd go to heavy metal karaoke at the Castle Pub in Calgary, which was hosted by Tron from FUBAR, which won't make any sense to you, but FUBAR is this cult movie that was made in Calgary. It's ridiculous, but the point is it's very Calgary, and one of the guys who was in the movie was the host of heavy metal karaoke, and so we would go there all the time and sing Kiss or whatever. Yeah, so I enjoyed that. And then even when Cindy Lee started, like actually a few years after, I would practice vocals singing karaoke songs all the time, and that lasted probably like a year or so, just practicing like that. So yes, I like karaoke.
Awesome. And the last thing is that are you working on anything at the moment, or you don't have to say if you are as well, but or is there anything else that you'd want to share with people, or like recommendations for things to listen to, fans of yours in New Zealand?
Oh yeah, I mean yeah, I'm working on a double, well, I've been working on a double record for about 3 years now, and then there's going to be another rarities record which I want to finish by the summer, but we'll see what actually happens. But yeah, double record and then a rarities record. And then for music to listen to, I'm trying to think of like people I just toured with. There was I toured with Mary Jane Dunphy, who was in a thing called CCFX for a while, and the County Liners is another one of their bands, but they're gonna release another record soon, and they sent it to me in advance. It was fucking incredible, and their live performance was totally just brought me life. So I was really impressed by that. I played with them in Richmond, Virginia, and it was just amazing. I don't know, like it was just like old school. And what I mean by that is like they were really entertaining you. Like they were sweating, like just dripping buckets and dancing and singing, like their life depended on it, you know? Which is something I can't do, you know? I think that's so. I was just really impressed by that. So I'd say Mary Jane Dunphy.
Okay, I've got like 2 minutes left or something like that, so I'm just gonna say a massive thank you.
I'm a punisher. I feel like I blew the whole thing. I didn't realize I'd just talk about Jesus for.
No, you are not a punisher. This is the kind of thing I can listen to forever, so honestly, it's okay, and I'm just that glad that I have this recorded. So I can go back to it and look up these televangelists because there's nothing better than watching them on a Sunday afternoon. Thank you so much, Pat. Honestly.
I appreciate you taking the time and tracking me down. I mean, you're on the other side of the world, for Christ's sake. So, yeah, appreciate it.